From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 549. In this episode, Scott talks with Damian Brady about orchestrating and automating deployments with Octopus Deploy.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Damian Brady, who's a software engineer and community person over at Octopus Deploy. And actually, I'm realizing, kind of just as we start talking, that I had Octopus Deploy on the show 5 years ago, almost to the day. Do you remember who I had on and why?
I do. And hi, Scott. Thanks for having me. You had Paul Stavelle. And I think it was during the startup series in September 2011.
Yeah, it was a whole series of shows week after week where we were talking to people who had ideas for startups. And Paul was just kind of coming up with a startup.
He was, yeah. It was really interesting. I listened to it again just the other day just to refresh my memory. Mm-hmm. Really interesting how much it's changed since then. He's talking about some of the ideas he had that Octopus might do in the future. And, you know, all those things are in the past now. So, yeah, fascinating to get a bit of an insight into what he was thinking at the time.
So when he started his company, it was just him, wasn't it? I think he'd moved to London or something.
Yeah, it was just him. It was him with an idea, and he started getting that running. And I think towards the end of version 2, which was several years later, was the first time he pulled somebody else on. And that was, I believe, Nick Blumhart was involved. So he does SiriLog and Seek and things now. But he got involved around version 2. But now we're up to 20-odd people, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, much bigger than it was.
Because I'm looking here at the description, and we referred to it as a micro ISV.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those, just a little company. Like, I'm a micro startup. Myself and Greg Shackles have our little thing that we're waiting to make us $1 million. But it also points out the idea of being an overnight success in 5 years, you know. Yeah. I had a friend on the show, Lovey, a while back, who was becoming an overnight success. And when I pushed her on that, she said it took 13 years to do it.
Yeah, I listened to that show, actually. Yeah, really interesting that people only notice in one big hit. And I think Octopus is a little bit unique in that over the last 2 or 3 years, we've had pretty steady growth. But yeah, the first year or two that Paul was at it, you know, the occasional sale, I think. So micro ISV, and then suddenly became, I guess, an ISV. And then macro is in the future, possibly.
So what is the problem that Octopus solves, and why is it interesting? And I would also point out, just in the interest of full disclosure, that a couple of times Octopus has sponsored a feed on my blog, but that's not related to why we're having a chat today.
No. So Octopus was basically written to help deployment automation. So it's a deployment automation tool primarily for .NET developers, although that becomes less true as we go on. And it's designed to basically make sure that your deployments are trustworthy, repeatable, scalable, and all those good things that you want to happen when you're deploying your application all the way through to production.
So when you think about, like, the application development lifecycle, there's, you know, continuous integration that we pushed a lot kind of in the late 90s and early 2000s. Then that turned into continuous deployment. Is this a build server and a deployment server? Where does it fit into the chain?
Yeah, so we come in after the build. So if you're using a build server at the moment, usually TeamCity or Team Foundation Build, those are the really common ones, but it could be Bamboo or Jenkins or anything like that. The build occurs, so it takes all your code, compiles it, runs your tests, does all that kind of stuff, and then produces a package or a series of packages. And I think when you were talking to Paul back in 2011, and even until fairly recently, those packages were NuGet packages. So basically a zip with a manifest with some version information and things like that. But once that package has been created, Octopus takes that package and will deploy it through your environment. So through dev, staging, test, QA, production, and so on, in a consistent way. And the idea really is that once you have that package, that's the one package you want to deploy. So, the idea of build once, deploy many, and making sure that that process occurs the same way every single time, so there's no surprises when you get to production.
When I'm looking at my blog here, and in March of 2011, so a little more than a year before I talked to Paul, I said, if you're using X copy, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And I remember giving a talk where I kind of described, you know, if you open up two Explorer windows and then drag your stuff into production, right? If you're using FileZilla to go into production, if you remote desktop into production and then copy paste from the remoting system, you might be deploying wrong. And people always laugh in this kind of uncomfortable and nervous way.
Yeah, yep. They laugh and then go back to their offices and do exactly that, which, you know, it's one of these things that really falls into that bucket of the thing that you don't know that you don't know. It's really hard to tell that that's a bad thing if that's just your reality day to day. You know, copying files to production and, you know, copying the this is the real production web config file over the top of web config just to make sure that, you know, you've got the right configuration settings. You know, that's just something that people do. And it, in a lot of places, they don't realize that that's not a great way of doing things. It's not repeatable. It's not very scalable. Takes time and, you know, is basically dangerous.
Is that fair? Is that, I mean, some people might say, well, you know, it's no big deal. I mean, I'll be totally honest with you. I have worked in large systems, on large systems, and made continuous reliable deployments, but my blog I manage with FileZilla.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Every time I do it, I feel kind of gross about it. But at the same time, you know, I deploy twice a year.
Yeah. Oh, look, and that's absolutely the case. It's one of these things. If you are a team of one person, you're probably not going to implement an entire Scrum, you know, daily stand-ups with the person sitting across from you and then continuous integration with full code coverage over test suites and, you know, deployment pipelines and all that sort of stuff if you're deploying once or twice a year. I mean, I have a blog which I just ported to Ghost, actually, on running on Azure websites, I think. And I just use Kudu straight from GitHub. So I check in and I commit and push and it's live.
Okay. So you let Azure do the deployment. So basically you have a webhook, you check it into Git,
yep.
And then it gets deployed from Git.
Yeah, absolutely. And for my blog, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I did this the other day, actually. I upgraded it and the whole thing just collapsed. And so I rolled back. But the outcome of that was that nobody could visit my blog for an hour. And, you know, if somebody was visiting my blog during that hour, that's probably fairly unlikely anyway. So that's not a big deal. But if you're talking about, you know, deployment in a bank or in a large organization where people are using your application constantly, then that's a different story. You don't really want to have this system of Word documents and trying to remember everything that you need to do and do it the same way each time. That's the idea behind tools like Octopus, really, is to automate that and make sure that it's trustworthy. You know that when you check in your code, eventually it's going to get to production in the safe way, or it's not going to get to production if it's going to break things.
Mm-hmm. When I was working in banks, we would have, you know, 7, 10, 15 web servers all kind of working in tandem. And we'd get weird little flaky bugs where, you know, a page would look one way and then you'd click and then you'd come back and it would look fine. And you go, what in the heck's going on? And you realize that, like, web 7 is out of sync.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what do you do? Or such and such a version of a DLL is wrong. And then inevitably someone would go and remote desktop in, run DIR, check version numbers, and we'd kind of run around figuring out which DLL is out of sync. Are deployment systems like this meant to fix that, or isn't that what containers are meaning to fix?
Yeah, and that is kind of the way that the containers are entering the picture as well. So one of the core principles behind deployment automation and things like that is making sure that, you know, you can build from at least a known starting point. So it may not be bare metal, but it might be, you know, an OS with containers running on it. So rather than just deploying, oh, here's a little update to the application, which should be in this state in production to bring it up to speed, you deploy the whole thing again. And containers, you know, you can't get closer to deploying the whole thing again than deploying the entire you know, the entire container with everything and all its resources on it. You know, you can't do that quite the way you can with containers. So that repeatability of deploying everything is kind of where containers is going to solve that problem, I think.
Mm-hmm. So then let's say the containers takes over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow everyone's doing containers.
Yep.
Where does a continuous deployment tool like Octopus or whatever fit into that world then?
Yeah, that's interesting and actually something we're trying to work out now. We think there's still a place for Octopus. So the difference between something like building your package into a Docker image and then pushing that out into a container service, that's kind of a one step. You know, take this version of the image and then run it, and that's it. Mm-hmm. In a real environment, you might have a number of those containers, and then you might also have a database that's sitting in the background, a few network things that need to happen, maybe some notifications that need to occur when a new version comes out. So those additional steps is where we think Octopus is probably going to provide the value.
I see.
At the same time, I mean, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. So things like Kubernetes and so on that orchestrate, you know, spinning up new containers and balancing and all that kind of stuff. If that's already being used by the community, we don't want to write our own version of that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd prefer to integrate with that. But it's interesting you bring that up because we just released an RFC for our Docker support. It's on our blog. And basically, we're asking people how they see Octopus and Docker working together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, we don't want to tread on the toes of, you know, something that's already being used in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we want to add value where we can.
Well, and it brings up the question, I think, of when a prescription becomes best practices and then just becomes how people do things, you know?
Hmm.
We are right now, I think, learning how containers ought to work. And we're kind of on the tail end of learning how continuous deployment ought to work.
Yep.
And people are writing prescription blog posts and docs and books about, you know, this is how we do it at Twitter. This is how we do it at whatever. This is the way it's done. It's very prescriptive.
Hmm.
And then in a couple of years, that'll simply become the way it's done. You know what I mean? Like everything goes through those phases.
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of happened with, you know, agile software development. You don't really need to.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't really need to talk about whether somebody's doing their software development in an agile way. That's just the way you do software development now.
Hopefully.
And even like, hopefully, yeah, everybody does that, right? And hopefully the same thing with CI to a lesser extent, I suppose, where, you know, you don't have to worry about the main version of the code being on Steve's machine. You know, that's not a thing that you tend to worry about. You integrate your code by committing it to a source control repo that's the shared one, the master branch or trunk. Mm-hmm. And it's something we used to talk about. And now it's kind of a, you know, in most places, they'll probably do that. It's just a way of doing business now.
Well, it does, but you do bring up an issue though, because I'm sure that there are people listening who we just lost. Because they were like, well, you know, we're still on CVS or we just got on SVN or, you know, we work for the government.
Yeah.
And, you know, gosh, it is, you know, the server is under Anna's desk and then it gets copied onto Steve's. You know what I mean? Like that, those things still exist. There's a software maturity, but I think we do agree that once you learn about continuous integration and then continuous deployment, you realize, wow, that is exactly what we need. Inevitably, though, people say, our systems, our bosses, our paperwork doesn't allow that.
Yeah, and you're right. I've basically been lucky enough to be in an echo chamber of this kind of talk for, you know, for 10 years-ish now, where continuous improvement and continuous integration and deployment and stuff, those are things that you think about, and the organization you work for has some investment in, you know, in trying to make this process or trying to keep up with these processes. But that's not the case in every environment. And I have been there. I've worked in government departments where you have that typical kind of big bang, you know, this is a 6-month project. And then at the end, you deploy the project. And then there's 2 months of trying to work out what went wrong. And then you walk on to a new project. So, you know, before Agile was a thing, at least in the .NET world, you know, that kind of, one deployment cycle was a, you know, it kind of prevents this thought about how the cycles can occur nicely and, you know, how everything fits together from a process perspective.
Mm-hmm. How important do you think it is that the deployment be continuous versus the deployment simply be reliable and repeatable?
Yeah, I think quite a while ago you spoke to Jez Humble and Martin Fowler at the GoTo conference. I think it was in 2012. And that they've got that canonical book, obviously, the continuous delivery book. And so that's really the difference between continuous delivery and continuous deployment. So continuous deployment itself, I don't think is really that important, but continuous delivery is much more important. So the difference between those two, as explained by those guys, was really that continuous deployment is actually deploying your software to production or whatever environment on a continuous basis. But continuous delivery is being able to deploy that whenever you want. So being in a situation where you can decide you want to deploy to production now and you can do it. It's not going to take a 3-month process of signatures and things like that. So I think it's much more important to be able to deploy rather than actually deploying it continuously.
Okay. So if someone's listening and thinking, well, you know, we just got our continuous integration system set up, maybe it's time to start thinking about continuous deployment. Maybe they can just take it back a notch and say, well, let's just get a reliable push button deployment.
Yeah. And that's kind of the first point. And even in some really, really like cutting edge, move fast and break stuff kind of environments, they still don't push to production continuously. They still might want, you know, one person in charge to be able to push the button. But if that's all it takes, pushing a button, then that's a fantastic position to be in.
Right. It sure does make us feel bad, though, don't you? Like, you know, WordPress deploys 68,000 times a day.
It's just
Really? Yeah. We do it twice a year. You know, it's just, it's kind of set up to continuous deployment. Like, how much is too much?
Yeah, yeah. And it depends a little bit how your customers get your product, too. So, in our case with Octopus, we will deploy whenever we think it makes sense to deploy to production. We could probably do it continuously, but that doesn't make for a really good experience for people going to download the latest version. Even as it stands, usually when we release a major or a minor version, the next few days we'll have a few updates to fix some small bugs that we found. And we get complaints about that. People saying, you know, you just released 3.4 and now it's 4 days later and you're up to 3.4.4. You know, can you tell me when it's stable? So, well,
it feels sloppy.
It does. Yeah. Frank. But I mean, the alternative really is sitting on those little bugs.
And I think that, you know, .NET Core is going to start seeing that too. You know, we'll put out 1.0 and 1.01 and things like that. And for some people, they're going to be like, awesome, look, they're really actively working on this. And other people are going to say, wow, this is not okay. Wait 2 years and make it really stable and then talk to me when it's done.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It makes things, lot easier if you're deploying to the web, of course, because then you can deploy these things and they just happen and, you know, nobody has to download a new version or update their packages or anything like that. It just, you know, oh, this new feature's just lit up, which is great.
So it sounds like when I think the word octopus, it's not just deploying to one place. It's deploying to farms of places. And it's the orchestration of not just a bunch of websites in a bunch of places, but if you had a large multi-tiered, multi-layered application, like a SharePoint installation or something big that required 5, 10, 15 machines and they all had different roles, that could get pretty hairy if I was going to try to write that in a PowerShell script.
Yeah, definitely. And so, I mean, you could still write that in a PowerShell script. I'd probably recommend writing it in a few PowerShell scripts or at least having some decent logging. So if something goes wrong, you know, roughly where you're up to. But something like Octopus will have individual steps for each of those tasks. And by treating the targets as kind of a first class citizen, you can say, well, on my web role, I want you to deploy this IIS, you know, this ASP.NET website and set up IIS. And if you add another, add another machine to that web farm, then, you know, that machine will then get those steps run as well.
Let me describe something to you, and you can maybe tease me if this was dumb. Because if you go out and you go in and Google for large scale PowerShell deployment, you'll find a paper that I wrote in July of 2007. So, you know, it's, what is that, 9 years ago? So I apologize. And I actually wrote it in November 2006. It's a PDF I wrote for my CTO that was called Managing Large Scale Deployment with PowerShell.
Yep.
And, you know, we have to remember, people have to remember when this happened, right? PowerShell 1.0 you know, Visual Studio 2003, 2005, Windows Server 2003. You know, we still had NANT for builds and stuff. Okay. And what we ended up doing was putting custom services on all of our Windows machines. So you'd boot up a brand new Windows machine, you'd put a service on it, and then we'd have, it was bad, but again, I feel bad even explaining it. We checked in the binaries into source control, like Subversion, and then labeled them and said, here's the binaries. Then I would call out to 15 different Windows services and say, go get that label. They would then check it out, read only into the location, into IIS www root or whatever, run some scripts, and you would have a giant distributed data center solution, completely distributed. And then you would call out to those things. So this was, you know, baling wire and miracles. If people know who MacGyver was, this is the MacGyver scripting thing.
But
we insane?
No, well, look, from a conceptual point of view, I don't mind that. That's quite good. I mean, you're meeting the requirements of, you know, you've got this one build, this one set of packages that you're deploying, and you're deploying them in a consistent way, right? That's the same scripts that run on every one of those machines.
Okay.
So to add a new machine to a web farm, for example, you would spin that machine up, install the agent on that machine, and then and it would it would just join in. So
join in,
and presuming everything is completely scripted, right? There's nobody RDPing into a thing and file copies and
that was the point, was to keep us off the remoting.
I mean, that's actually not too far away from what Octopus does. We keep the packages in a different way, but we run those same tasks on those target machines to pull down the package that needs to be deployed and run the scripts that need to be run.
Mm-hmm. How do you ensure, though, that the files are, like, you know, unchanged? Because what we would do is we would have, because the files were in source control, we could tell if they were dirty, if they'd been modified.
Yeah.
And then we could revert to a label. So it was a little bit weird, but does Octopus and systems like it check and make sure the system doesn't get changed, or do you just redeploy?
So, Octopus has a concept of a release as a noun, which is kind of a definition of everything that needs to happen to get a version of the application running.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that will include the versions of the packages that you're deploying. So, let's say you have a web application and a web API and some database scripts or something like that.
Okay.
Those packages will be versioned. And then, in Octopus, you would say, right, I'm going to create a release, and this release is 1.2, for example, and it includes the web package 1.2 and maybe the web API package 1.0 because that one hasn't changed, and the database scripts 1.0 because they haven't changed. And so that's your release. And then when you deploy that release, it will use that version of the packages in your dev environment. And then if you deployed a test, for example, it will use those same versions of the packages. So the packages that actually get pushed out to the machines are the ones that are defined in that release that you're pushing out.
Okay. And do you ever have to worry about, like, what if something gets changed? Do you start seeing a flaky, like we talked about at the beginning?
Oh, so if something changes on a target machine?
You know, someone does remote in, or a file gets uploaded or corrupted, or, you know, something bad happens and www7 is different than 1 through 8.
Yeah, that's so at the moment, Octopus is very prescriptive in what you tell it to do. So it will do the steps that you perform, and then beyond that, it'll keep an eye on that machine to make sure it can still talk to it. But beyond that, it doesn't really, you know, check that the right versions of system resources and things are running.
Mm-hmm.
That said, we've recently released in 3.4 machine policy. So when it does a health check, you can run arbitrary PowerShell as part of that health check. So you could write PowerShell to say, look, I need to make sure these things are on these versions, otherwise the machine is not healthy.
Or check the SHAs of the SHA hashes or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, they're your machines. If you want to go in and copy some files around, you probably can if you have if you have the permissions, but it's
it all depends, you know. And we were worried from a banking perspective that, you know, evil banking, evil software that we didn't intend got out there. But it sounds like what I was doing at the file level, you're already doing at the package level. You know what package you should you put out there.
Yeah, that's right.
So then I hear a lot when I hear about deployment about this idea of DSC, desired state configuration.
Mm.
And it seems to me like it's, and this is really oversimplifying it, I'll probably get in trouble for this, but it feels like it's the difference between being very declarative and saying, I wish the machine looked like this, versus being very programmatic, where it's like, here's some scripts that will make it look like that.
Yep. Yeah. So in that respect, Octopus is very, programmatic, like very prescriptive in do this, then do this, then do this. If you look at something like Chef or Puppet, I believe they're more declarative. They say this machine is, and DSC, obviously, this is what the machine should look like.
Yeah. Won't they compile into like script? Because ultimately everything becomes instructions, right? Someone has to go and do this, if that.
Yeah. They do. And I guess this is where, and this is probably just me being uncomfortable with it, but I'm kind of uncomfortable with the idea of, hey, have a look at this machine, you know, telling an automated process, have a look at this machine and then make it look like this. The questions that are raised in my mind are, you know, have you covered everything?
Right.
If you're saying, I want IIS to be this version and PowerShell this version to be on the machine, what about the other stuff that you haven't checked, that you're not verifying? Now, that's probably not going to be solved by being prescriptive rather than declarative, but it's problems that, you know, kind of get brushed under the rug, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I don't think that's a reason not to use PowerShell DSC or things like that.
But doesn't that mean that I could use PowerShell DSC with something like Octopus and use them together, and then I get the best of both worlds?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what a lot of people do. And that comes back to the treating servers like cattle, not pets, or whatever the new I think that one's not terribly politically correct anymore. So
I don't think that is politically correct, but I think the point is that you love your pets.
Yes.
And you do not care at all about your servers, and you should not get attached to them and name them after, like, all the people in the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
you
know, just exactly right.
It really should be Web 1 and Web 7, and you know, hey, Web 7 goes down, you shut it off, and you get another one.
Yeah, exactly right. And by using something like DSC, you can say, well, this machine's just not behaving very well anymore, so let's just tear it down and spin up a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And spin up a new one, and we actually have DSC, and I think in Azure, machine extensions as well for the Tentacle agent, which is what Octopus uses to do the work on the target machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have integration with DSC. So, you can say, spin up a new machine, and I want an Octopus Tentacle to be on it, and also run these scripts to register myself as a new web server with Octopus. And in the latest versions of Octopus as well, Octopus can respond to those events of a new machine being made available and can deploy the versions of the application that should be running. So, really good for kind of auto-scaling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something a lot of customers did themselves with a whole bunch of scripts, but now it's kind of out of the box.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. And then if I've got, you know, dev test staging and things like that, you know, almost my own little personal cloud and things that I've got internally, does Octopus understand not just the deployment pipeline, but the run it, you know, get it into development first and get it into smoke testing and then have it promote builds get promoted basically all the way out the door?
Yeah. So you can define the life cycle of what goes where and even who can deploy to the different environments. So, the typical one is, you know, you might have your dev, which everybody can access, and then test, which most people can access. Maybe just the testers are allowed to click the button to go to that test environment. But beyond that, you know, your developers, you probably don't necessarily in a large organization want to give them the ability to deploy to production by clicking a button. So, maybe they can see what's running in production, but it's the CEO who clicks the button.
Mm.
But you can define, so you can define that life cycle of, well, we need to go to here, then we need to go to at least two test environments first, and then we can go to QA, and then we can go to production, for example.
So, you're pretty chill. You're a pretty relaxed person. How important do you think it is for people who are listening to this podcast to think hard when they get to work, because they may be listening to us on the way to work right now, about their deployment, and if they haven't got at least push button deployment, if not continuous deployment, that they need to like really make this the year that they make that happen.
I think it's a really important thing to do. If you're in an environment now, though, where you have a team of 20 developers and when you get to production, that's the first time you do a compilation of everybody's code, then those are probably problems you have to sort out first.
Okay.
So
good point.
I'd say, yeah, continuous integration first.
Okay.
And then once you've got that down, once you can commit your code and know that, you know, you haven't broken anything hideous, then it's definitely time to start looking at continuous delivery or continuous deployment.
Okay. So it really is a formal, you got to take a hard look at your application development lifecycle and how you're going to treat that.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no point having everything automated to go all the way through to production if you're not really sure what the code looks like before you do that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very valid point. Cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
It's Damian Brady from Octopus Deploy. You can find, of course, Damian online on Twitter. And do check out Octopus Deploy. Like I said, they have sponsored the blog before, but I also really respect the work that Paul and his team have done down there, and it's worth checking out. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.